I invite you to be with me now in a spirit of prayer. God, as we think about sitting at your table, having a place at your table, and finding a place for others, may these words of hope and love and challenge be in the midst of my words. And may what we need to hear to move us forward fall upon ears and hearts and minds and eyes that are open. Amen. Have you ever had one of those dinners? You know, the kind where the food's been gobbled up, but the laughter and the conversation linger long into the night, where no one in particular is rushed to get out, and you're just content savoring one another's company around the table. It's the kind of meal, or post-meal, rather, that doesn't permit such worry about the future, besides maybe what you're ordering for dessert. The Spanish language has a tidy little word for that kind of experience, sobremesa, literally meaning over the table. And it's a word that the English language doesn't have. There's no direct translation, but sobremesa has been on my mind all week. In my life, as I suspect may be the case in yours, a lot of things have been discussed, hashed out, solved, argued about, confessed, sobremesa, over the table. My mind goes to a quote from Ronald Reagan, who said that all great change in America begins at the dinner table. And I'd have to agree. There's just something about sitting around a table, the dining room table, or the kitchen table, or anywhere we consider the honorary table in our homes or in our communities. Sharing a meal with others, sitting with loved ones you haven't seen in a while or those you see every day, lingering to savor, to listen, to lay it all out, to disagree, to learn, to laugh, to love. I think Jesus was on the same page as well. In the book of Luke, it seems you always find Jesus on his way to a meal, sitting at a meal, or leaving a meal, but ironically enough, Jesus wasn't exactly known for his table manners. Now, I don't mean prim and proper etiquette, the kind that warns us against gasp-worthy behaviors like reaching across the table or putting our elbows near our plates or not saying please or thank you or not knowing which fork to use first. Not those kinds of table manners. I'm talking about the manner with which Christ approached and sat at and invited others to the table, in the figurative and literal sense. Though the gospel records record him receiving and accepting many dinner invitations during his years in ministry, those mealtime scenes usually ended in drama, scandal, with someone being called out, annoyed, or offended. Now, before you rank Jesus among the worst dinner guests of all time, just think about it. More than once, he interrupted a meal to heal sick people on the Sabbath. I imagine Jesus often ate with dirty hands and wasn't too concerned about what he was wearing. Of course, he shared a table with the very least of these, and worst of all, he said things. Blunt, radical, accusatory, challenging things that no one cared to hear in the midst of their nice, quiet, non-confrontational dinner. This week's lectionary reading from Luke describes just such a not-so-nice scene. Jesus is invited for a Sabbath meal by a leader of the Pharisees. Arriving early, he sits and watches as his fellow guests scramble for places of honor around the table. Now, if I'm imagining the scene correctly, I imagine it being a lot like that school cafeteria I mentioned earlier, everyone scurrying and shoving each other, each fighting for their spot, one of prestigious near the host. perhaps to get his ear for the duration of the meal, or maybe just to say that they rubbed elbows with him, with the most important person in the room. And after observing their drama for a little while, Jesus calls them out, as he is known to do, with a parable. Knowing full well the social rules of his day, he renounces them and calls for a revolution, calls them to look at things upside down and differently. Not a revolution in arms or violence, but a revolution in table manners. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor, he encourages his fellow guests. Go and sit at the lowest place so that when your host comes, he may say to you, "Friend, move up higher." For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. I love the Message translation of this passage. Eugene Peterson says, "What I'm saying is, if you walk around with your nose in the air, you're going to end up flat on your face. But if you're content to be simply yourself, you will become more than yourself. If you're content to be simply yourself, you will become more than yourself." If that isn't countercultural enough, Jesus then turns to his host and continues, "When you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may be able to invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. You'll be and experience a blessing. You see, they won't be able to return the favor, but the favor will be returned at the resurrection of God's people." Now, our reading this week doesn't tell us how Jesus' listeners reacted. We don't know if they awkwardly laughed in discomfort, if they rolled their eyes and shook their heads in disbelief. We don't know if they questioned Jesus' sanity, if they argued back or followed his advice. But what I do know is how I think I would have responded. Because as much as I'd like to think I'd be on the same page as Jesus in the midst of that dinner party, I can see myself scrambling for a seat right along with the other people gathered for that meal. In fact, I think most of us would. Some of us would be wanting to get that seat of honor. Others of us would just want to get a seat so that we blend in. Either way, I think I would have been called out by Jesus, humbled by his words and their implication. You see, it's natural for us to want to surround ourselves with our friends, to save seats at the popular table, or at least at a table in which we feel we fit, so that we don't have to be alone and uncomfortable. After all, life is stressful enough without intentionally giving ourselves indigestion by sitting down at a table of people we know we don't like or don't agree with or will ruin our nice, peaceful evening. But see, if you haven't noticed, this is a common theme, especially the past couple of weeks. Jesus isn't really concerned with our time around the table being nice and quiet and peaceful and stress-free. For Jesus, the table is something more, something bigger. The table is a place of welcome, yes, but not welcome in the sense that it makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside. You see, the table is a place of raw and gritty and uncomfortable and messy welcome, real welcome, the kind of welcome that stretches us. The table is where we let go of everything being about me and we start thinking about we. When we dare to gather at Jesus' table, we are actively making a statement against a culture that is so focused on upward mobility and entitlement and competitiveness that surrounds us. There's nothing easy or straightforward about it, and it certainly requires hard work and consciousness and thinking and opening up and stretching over a long period of time. To eat and drink with God is to live in tension with the world, with the pecking orders that define so many institutions in our society. And yet it is what we are called to do as people of faith, to humble ourselves and place our hope not in what seat we are or how close to the head of the table we are, but hope in a radically different kingdom, a radically different way of being in the world. Jesus asks us to believe that our manners, our behavior at the table and about the table matter, because they do. Where we sit speaks volumes, and the people with whom we choose to sit, the people we welcome, the people we pull the chair out for, that reveals the stuff of our souls. Favor the ones who cannot repay you, Jesus says. Prefer the poor. Choose the least popular. Pull the chair out for people that cause the most amount of people to raise their eyebrows and scratch their heads. Think of we, not just me. This is the world God calls us to live in, and there is nothing ordinary about it. In her book, Bread and Wine, author Shauna Nyquist writes this. This is how the world changes, little by little, table by table, meal by meal, hour by hour. This is how we chip away at isolation and loneliness and fear. This is how we connect in big and small ways. We do it around the table. The table. The center of our worship space each week, the very center of Christ's life and ministry and mission, the center of our faith. A table, not a crown, not a throne, not a gun, not a wad of $100 bills, not something made of gold, a simple table. Christ is always calling for a revolution, for up to be down and down to be up, for things in this world to be different, to be more than they appear. And Christ is always reminding us that change, revolutions, big or small, they begin at the table, by where we sit and with whom, by our attitude with which we approach the table, by our willingness to even sit down. The table, where we lay aside that which we think makes us better or richer or more powerful or more popular, and we eat, we share, sobre mesa, over the table. Where we chip away at the danger of becoming overwhelmed by that isolation and loneliness and fear. Sobre mesa, over the table of grace, of peace, of love, and of hope. This is indeed the world that God calls us in which to live, and God's table that we sit at, and there is nothing ordinary about it. May we work to make it so in our world and in our lives. May our table manners, the manner in which we live our lives, reflect a God who has a seat saved for us and for all people. Amen.